You are listening to Books Are My People, a podcast for book lovers with book news, recommendations, and ruminations on living a literary life in Los Angeles. This is episode 124, and I'm recording on Tuesday, April 16th, 2024. If everything has gone well, I'm currently arting it up in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I am a very phobic flyer, even though I end up having to fly a lot. And in the past 21 years that my husband and I have been together, I've flown once on my own. I know, I'm a baby. Until this past weekend, I decided to be brave and face my fears in order to have this experience. So I'm hoping that as I record this while still in Los Angeles, future me had an okay flight and wasn't too nervous. And I'm preemptively sorry for whomever is seated next to me who may or may not be forced to hold my hand. Also, by the time you listen to this, I will have attended the LA Times Festival of Books, so I will have to report on that during my next podcast. But I'm really excited that my Kentucky friends, Amy and Carrie, hosts of the podcast The Perks of Being a Book Lover, flew out to accompany me to this festival. The school year is quickly winding down. My senior has like only a week left of school before he shifts to an independent project, and then he graduates high school at the end of May. I just can't believe it, but I'm very excited for him and all that his future holds. We've been very lucky that parenting our teenage boys has been a joy. I'm giving away a brand new copy of the current number one bestseller, The Women, by Kristen Hanna, if there's still anyone left out there who hasn't read it. I had purchased it for one of my three book clubs that I'm in, and I just ran out of time to read it. So I'm passing it along to one of you. To enter, please visit my initial Instagram post about the giveaway, leave a comment, and sign up for my Books Are My People newsletter on Substack, all one word if you're searching Substack, and then you can tag reading friends or post in your stories on Instagram for extra entries. This giveaway is open to U.S. mailing addresses only and will close on Thursday, May 9th, at 11:59 p.m. ET. I'll leave a link in the show notes to the original Instagram post. May is a Read With Me month on Substack. What does this mean? It means you should join me over on Substack, where we will be reading The Book of Ayn by Lexi Freeman, which was recommended to me by Andy Hunter, the CEO of bookshop.org and past guest on this show. The novel is satire, and it's only around 230 pages. We'll be reading about a quarter of the book a week, and I'll share a video on a specific aspect of the book once a week, and then we'll have a culminating Zoom at the end of May where we discuss the book. So come join us. It's $8 to join for the month on Substack, or $6.60 per month if you join for the year. Or you can join for a trial period for free when you recommend the Substack to three people who sign up for my newsletter. So many options to join in the reading fun. I'll leave a link in the show notes if you want more information, or you can always email me at booksaremypeople@gmail.com. And now it's time for some bookish news. April is National Poetry Month, and FSG, Fair, Strauss, and Giroux, have a poetry hotline that you can call Monday through Friday to hear one of their authors read part of a poem. The number to call is 385-DIAL-FSG or 385-342-5374. I'll leave the phone number in the show notes. There's been a big shakeup in the publishing industry as small press distribution closed last week. Abruptly, no warning. They are distributors for over 350 small presses who now have to figure out how they're going to publish their books. This is very concerning, as we all know that small presses struggle in general as they're competing with the big four. So I hope someone jumps in to take their place. Maybe there was a different distributor and this is their moment to shine and grow and become a bigger company, because like I said, there's over 350 presses that are now without distribution. Instructables is hosting a book and bookshelves contest. So it is a competition where you submit your library, maybe your library management system, It seems like you can sort of submit anything. They're saying it can be a bookmark, anything related to books. There are going to be 6 different prizes, ranging from bookmaking and binding to a book accessory prize. I guess that's like making bookmarks, to book-inspired judges prize, which is a project that is inspired by something from a book. I think that could be anything, an artistic interpretation. I don't know, anything. A bookshelf judges prize. So that would be sharing whatever structure it is that you use to house your books. There's an Autodesk design and make judges prize. So that's any project that uses Autodesk design software. I've never heard of that software. I don't know what it does. And last but not least, there's student judges prize. So that's any book related project, but you have to be of school age. And that includes college. And that ends in about a week. And I will leave a link in the show notes. And last but not least, Audible has released a new audio edition of George Orwell's chilling 1984, read by actors including Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, Tom Hardy, and many others. This unabridged version runs just under 3 hours and 30 minutes, and it's free with a free trial of Audible. Sarah Z. Short is a collage artist and printmaker from the woods of Rhode Island. Her background as an English teacher explains her love of books, which she also enjoys using as the primary material for her collages. Sarah works with found paper and ephemera, utilizing the stories of the past in her contemporary art. She begins many of her pieces by printing with wooden type on pages rescued from discarded books. The prints are then abstracted in her collage compositions to make the original letter forms unrecognizable. Her interest is in the shapes and white space she can make with the typography. So hello, Sarah.
Hello.
How are you?
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming. Where are you calling in from?
I am in Richmond, Rhode Island.
Oh, nice.
In the woods of Rhode Island.
Is it spring there yet?
It is. The daffodils are blooming and the cherry trees are beautiful and pink, and it's gorgeous. It's the best time of the year.
That's very exciting. I always have weather envy because I live in LA and it's pretty much the same every day, although we had a torrential rain pour over the weekend. But I can't remember how I discovered your work. I'm assuming it was through Instagram because I follow a lot of artists on there, and I was just so drawn to your art and how you combine language with art and collage. So my first question is, for how long have you been a collage artist? And would you even define yourself as a collage artist? I guess I'm putting that label on you, but maybe that's not how you define yourself.
No, I call myself a collage artist and a printmaker. And I came to collage for the first time at least 20 years ago. I took a continuing ed class at RISD, Rhode Island School of Design, and loved it, and then kind of forgot about it for a very long time, except when I was in the classroom and having my students working on collage projects, because I was an English teacher in the middle school and high school, and I often integrated collage with whatever book we were reading. So I did a lot of collage with them, but not much on my own until the pandemic started. And like a lot of other creatives, I was taking lots of online classes and happened to take a few collage classes. And that's really how I got back into it and where everything started for me, is with those online classes.
You work in a particular space that I'm absolutely obsessed with, this intersection of art and language. So what is your background in terms of incorporating language, words, and letters into your art? You mentioned you were an English teacher, and I'm guessing that that might play heavily into your art aesthetic.
Yes. I thought from the time I was elementary school that I was going to be a writer. So words have always been a part of my life. English major in college, then went into education and taught. Got an MFA in writing because I still thought I was going to be a writer. And when I first took an online collage class, it was with Melinda Tidwell, who's an artist who deconstructs books and uses that as her source material for her collages. And it just clicked for me to think of taking the language from those books and ripping them apart and repurposing it in art. And that's when the integration of words started. When I first began, I used lots of text and lots of words. But once I started letterpress printing, I didn't have enough letters to make complete words. So I could only print kind of fragments of letters and fragments of words. And I became more interested in the shapes I could create from the letters and how I placed them together in the prints, and then how I could cut them up when I collaged. So the more I did that, the more I stopped using complete words. And the stories are more what I'm creating in my head as I'm working and as I think about the history of all these vintage materials that I'm using. So it's changed a lot since that letterpress and since I really started to abstract everything. But I still leave some words visible in my pieces. Usually it's when the handwriting, if I find, a fly leaf that someone has signed, I might include their signature hidden almost in the piece. Or if somehow the composition develops and a one word is left visible, I might leave that. But I want whoever's looking at the piece to really have to dive into it to find the language and to realize the shapes were originally words and letters.
I have a couple of responses. One is that you are most definitely a writer. Anyone who looks at Sarah's descriptions of the art that she makes can see you write stories. I mean, they're like flash fiction about what the piece is about, which I absolutely love. Number two, as a person who also uses books, deconstructs books for collage fodder. It's interesting. I've mentioned this to a lot of people who are aghast that I do this, and I think they sort of fetishize the book. And I guess there's two camps. For me, once I've read a book, I've consumed it, if I know I'm done with it and I'm not going to be keeping it on my shelf, I have no qualms about tearing it apart and using it, repurposing it for something else.
Absolutely. And I work with really old books, and they're the ones that the libraries don't want, the bookstores don't want. They have no monetary value. They just are the dusty books that the authors have been forgotten. They're the things that just collect dust on the shelf and they end up being thrown out. And oftentimes they can't even be recycled. So I give them new life. And I feel like I've spent my entire life moving piles of books around. So it just continues. You're always shifting your library from one place to another and going back and forth to the library. So now I'm just ripping them apart instead. And now they are forever in a collage on the wall to enjoy.
When you were a teacher, what were some of your favorite books that you taught?
I loved teaching The Lightning Thief. My students love, I mean, I taught sixth graders for most of my teaching career, so they adored Greek mythology. And The Lightning Thief to them is a pretty thick book, but they got so excited about the stories that they were willing to sit with me for the amount of time it took to teach it. I loved Romeo and Juliet and Of Mice and Men and literature circles and book clubs. I had a giant classroom library and wrote a lot of grants to get sets of books for my students because I was a firm believer that they should be choosing what they wanted to read rather than me forcing titles on them. So when I needed to, I'd do a class novel, but most of the reading was the books that they selected themselves, which meant that I developed, and my students, by the end of the year, they loved to read because they decided what they wanted to read. It makes a big difference.
Makes a huge difference. Oh, that's great. I wish my kids had read The Lightning Thief. I love that book. Can you talk us through how you start a new piece, what the process is like, and something I'm very interested in, how in the world you get the glue or matte medium off of your fingers when you're done?
Let's see. So my pieces usually begin with whatever material I have most recently acquired and want to work with. So I have a size in mind. So I set up, my paper substrate or my board. And then I just start covering the panel, usually with book pages. And the composition develops as I respond to whatever I glue down. So I don't plan out the entire thing first. I glue as I go, which results in pieces that have lots of layers. And they're always a surprise to me because I didn't go in with a plan. Last summer, I acquired a giant stack of plat mat books, and they are massive. In each map on one side and the other side is fabric. And if you soak them, you can separate. So you have a map and then you have
Ooh.
this piece of fabric. I know. And it took me months to figure out how to best use the materials and the type of adhesive that would work to hold them down because of, the mats are really heavy, the fabric's really light. So this collection, I started looking at Japanese Boro textiles, and I looked at how the colors, all the indigo, and how they were layered. And then I discovered that there was Japanese Boro paper, where sheets of paper were adhered together and reused, and how the text would be visible from earlier layers as the papers were stacked. So the series I have now, lots of very quiet layered fabric and paper pieces. And as far as the matte medium that you peel off your fingers, I spend a lot of time at the end of the day standing at the bus stop with waiting for my son, just peeling glue. But I have started wearing gloves and to try to protect my skin from absorbing whatever chemicals are in that glue. It does take some of the fun out of it though, because I don't have that peeling process anymore.
Your hands come out like prunes. I mean, I look
They
the
do.
same as when I was a kid and used to go swimming for hours and hours and hours. Your hands
Right.
are
And it
just,
can't be good for you. But
probably
yeah,
not.
it is
No.
something satisfying about seeing what you've worked on your hands all day.
Yes, that is true. And I just also wanted to highlight something you said about discoverability, because as a novelist, I feel that way when I'm writing. People often ask if I plan what I write. And I do in phases. I'll plan out act one and then write to there and then think about it and plan act two. But I don't plan out an entire book every plot point, because for me, the excitement is in the discoverability, which I imagine sort of feels the same when you're making art.
Absolutely. I hadn't thought about that, but I can see that when I write, I would never sit and plan every scene of my book from beginning to end. As long as I have in my mind that I know there's a possible outcome, I'm just going to write my way to it or create my art to get to that point when I know it's done. So lots of similarities.
I believe you have some workshops coming up. Can you share them with our audience in case there are any locals listening?
Absolutely. I have three upcoming this summer in Rhode Island, all at different locations, and I'm not handling the registration for any of them. But for anyone who's interested, if they are signed up for my newsletter, I always update when I know that registration has opened for the classes. And that newsletter is available through my website, which is sarahzshort.com. And I also and part of Jack Ravi's Collage Connect class, an online class that is launching for World Collage Day or International Collage Day. So I'm one of the guest instructors for that, along with lots of other amazing collage artists. And details for that will be all over social media and also on my Instagram and website.
That sounds fantastic. I didn't know there was an International Collage Day, but there should be.
Yes, it's May 1st, possibly.
Okay, and I'll be sure and link up to your website and all of your social media outlets in
Thank
the
you.
podcast notes. So we're going to move on to book recommendations. So Sarah, what is your first pick?
My first pick, I alternate between a few genres. So my first pick is the fantasy novel, The Fourth Wing, by Rebecca Yarros. And I just reread it for, I think, the third time because it is such a wonderful book. When I was younger, I used to love the books of Anne McCaffrey, so science fiction with a lot of dragons, the Dragon Riders of Pern. And The Fourth Wing brings the dragons back. And it's a series that is pretty violent. It's definitely not for kids. The protagonist, Violet, was supposed to be a scribe, so spending her time in libraries doing research. But her powerful mother forces her into this elite school where you are trained to become a dragon rider if you are lucky enough to survive that long. So the story follows Violet through her training and meeting these dragons for the first time in this really brutal school as she tries to survive from one day to the next and realizes the government has been keeping lots of secrets from them. So that is The Fourth Wing by Rebecca Yarros.
I've only heard good things about this book. So many people love this book.
So good.
My first pick is Real Americans by Rachel Kong, which came out last Tuesday. I'm a super fan of Kong's novel, Goodbye Vitamin, and I was very eager to read this novel. Real Americans begins with a snippet of Mei's life in 1966 Beijing during Mao's Cultural Revolution. She's stealing a lotus seed from a museum. Part one is told from Lily's point of view, Mei's daughter. She's American-born, living in New York, working at a crappy job with a very microaggressive, racist boss. And at an office party, she meets Matthew. He's confident, worldly, and he sweeps her off his feet, although Lily is cautious of his wealth because she did not grow up that way. In part two, we move to Nick, Lily's 15-year-old son, who lives in the Pacific Northwest, and it's 2021. Nick learns about his estranged father's identity through genetic testing, and after connecting with him, shifts his life trajectory. Part three, and I know I'm bouncing around all over the place, but the form of this novel is important, and I'm really saying as little as possible about each. We return to Mei, the grandmother in Beijing in the 60s, and how she and her partner ended up immigrating to the United States. The structure reminded me a bit of Chloe Benjamin's novel, The Immortalists. Each main character has a section that carries through, and once we leave them, we only see them through other characters' points of view. This is a novel about cultural and national identity and the ways in which the repercussions of choices are passed through to the next generation. Overall, it was an enjoyable and interesting read. But I still definitely loved Goodbye Vitamin more. But thank you to Knopf and to NetGalley for the advanced review copy. Sarah, what is your second pick?
My second pick is Tana French, The Hunter. I would recommend every single one of French's books. They are all mysteries, thrillers. Usually, I think always, the protagonist is a police officer. Her writing is brilliant, it's beautiful, and they are all set in Ireland. The setting influences the stories. So The Hunter is the most recent book, but if you're going to read Tana French, I would suggest starting with The Searcher, because the stories are connected, though you can read one without having read the other. But it's set in a small village in Ireland. The protagonist is Cal. He is a retired Chicago police detective who buys a ramshackle cottage in Ireland because he is looking for peace after his busy and often dangerous career. But then he stumbles into all kinds of problems in the small village. The conflict comes from a scheming pair who has this idea of swindling the villagers using the idea of gold being hidden in the rivers. And then the plot gets even more complicated and becomes a murder mystery. So that is The Hunter by Tana French.
Again, I've heard only great things about Tana French and specifically The Hunter. It is on my never-ending perpetual to-read list. Next up for me is 100 Days by Alice Pung. I picked this one up. It was originally published in 2022 from the new-ish release shelf at the library. It turns out Pung is the author of many novels for adults as well as children's books. I know I can be a bit fixated on covers, but the front of 100 Days is a simple painting of a watermelon in a big pot, which perfectly fits this book about 16-year-old Karuna, who lives with her mother in Melbourne, Australia. Her father has abandoned them, and her mother is very needy and overbearing, so much so that she makes her daughter sleep in bed with her. When Karuna gets pregnant, her mother's firm grip tightens as she's locked in their public housing apartment waiting for her due date. Her mother also keeps threatening to take ownership of the child and raise it as her own. I found the form of the book really interesting. It's Karuna addressing her unborn child, telling her what will no doubt become part of the child's family history. Karuna's voice is intimate and raw. It's a book that explores power dynamics between mothers and daughters, and in this case, taken to an extreme. And I couldn't help but think this was a retelling of Rapunzel of sorts. This is the kind of book that could easily be read in one sitting. And again, that's 100 Days by Alice Pung. What is your last pick?
I had to bring in an art book. So I chose Katie Hessel's The Story of Art Without Men. I like Katie. I have always looked at art and not necessarily noticed that there weren't a lot of women being represented until I became an artist and started looking, and you know, where are all the women? And Katie Hessel started researching from the Renaissance on all of the women whose work has been forgotten and overlooked, and brings them back to life for us, especially in the way that she is pointing out how some of these artists influenced the work of the male artists of the time period, but never received credit as inspiration. So I think that's particularly interesting. Annie Albers, Janet Sobel. It's a really great book if you're interested in art history and if you want to discover artists that you have never heard of, but that were really important to how art has developed and been seen. And that's Katie Hessel, The Story of Art Without Men.
I have this book as well. It's a juicy, chunky book. I have post-its all over it. It's fantastic. I love it. Tell us once again, where can people find you on social media?
On social media, on Instagram, I am Sarah_Z_short. And my website is, again, my name.
And I will link up to all of Sarah's social media links in the show notes, as well as all of the books we've discussed today. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And I will be the first to sign up for your online collage course.
Thank you very much.
I hope you all have a wonderfully bookish week.